Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday, the 21st of August. And man, what a panel we have. Let me introduce everybody to you. It's 13 minutes past 9 o'clock. We have a lot to talk about. It's going to be a busy morning, so let's get to it. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Big Joe. Wonderful to be here.
Excellent. Good to have you here. Also, Times Union columnist and Wednesday regular Chris Churchill is here.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Great.
Excellent.
Great.
Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University at Albany, Robert Griffin is with us. Good morning.
Good morning, Joe. And just a shout out to all of the students that are coming back to the region's universities and colleges this week.
I think, St. Rose moves in today, SUNY's tomorrow, although you have kids already, right?
I have kids already. In fact, yeah. We have our living learning communities are on campus tonight.
Wow. Well, it has started, and we're ready for it, I think.
No choice if we're not.
I think. That's right. Investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo is here. Good morning.
Good morning. I wish anybody looking in on the video could see this. I'm in this group with giant men everywhere and me.
And yet we're the ones afraid.
Very.
But I am on time. I am on time.
You were on time before.
You are totally, totally.
I didn't want to say heavyweight.
We are two weird
men.
See what I mean? So last week, David Soares, we said to him, are you going to be here Friday? And he goes, yes, I'm going to be here Friday. I said, are you sure you're going to be here Friday? And he said, yes, I'm going to be here Friday. And last night he said, okay, I'm not going to be here Friday. Would you like me to come in today on Wednesday? And we said yes.
Oh, my stepdaughter happens to be moving in on Friday. And so I
college moving.
Yes. I did not realize that I would be leaving the house at 6 a.m. with a U-Haul truck full of things that's going to be fitting into a room that's smaller than this, by the way. I just want I'm excited to see the magic happen of how we get all of our stuff in a small room. So I do apologize, but thank you, Sarah.
No, it's great, and we love having you here, Albany County District Attorney David Soares. Okay.
And your desserts here on Wednesdays are so much better than what you offer for like morning food.
Yeah, they like the bagel display that we're enjoying.
The catering starts out really good on Monday and then starts to wane off by the time you get here on Friday. Yeah. Well, welcome all. It's good to have you here, and we, of course, welcome you, the listener, to join in on our conversation. What would it be without you? Probably less soul-crushing, but, you know, we have lots of stories to talk about, and if you want to talk about them, too, you certainly can. It's panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. You know, we thought this whole Greenland thing was a joke, and And they said it wasn't on the front burner, it was on the back burner. So then last night, the president said, well, look, I was supposed to go to Denmark. I'm not going to Denmark. I'm going to postpone that trip because the prime minister, because he's mad. He's mad now, and he's going to show the prime minister because she said, we're not going to sell the country to you. And the president got mad about that, so abruptly called off a trip to Denmark, announcing in a tweet that he was not going to the country because the country's leader was not interested in selling him Greenland. The move comes 2 days after Trump told reporters that owning Greenland, a self-governing country that is part of the Kingdom of Denmark, would be nice for the United States from a strategic perspective. Trump's announcement suggests that despite his denials, the central purpose of his trip had been the discussion of a U.S. purchase of the massive glaciered island, which holds increasing value as melting sea ice opens new parts of the Arctic to shipping and resource extraction. Who'd like in on that fun first, Alan?
Well, yeah, something's rotten over there.
Yeah. Shakespearean reference.
It was Shakespearean reference. Exactly right. Thank you. So, you know, I have believed from the first moment he started with all this nonsense that it's just one more distraction that he intended to throw onto the pyre, trying to figure out whatever else was going on in his life that wasn't very attractive right now, this would be a way of distracting things. He had to know they were going to sell it. It's ridiculous. And by the way, I read somewhere, somebody can tell me whether this is true or not, that it doesn't belong to Denmark. But I'm not exactly sure of that either.
There's some dispute about ownership, but it's long been recognized as Danish. I didn't think it was such a stupid idea. He's a real estate guy who's making a big move for a big real estate move, and he's right. It is strategically important. It reminded me of Seward going after Alaska. But what is the problem here is that he has no negotiating skills at all. He announces or lets it leak that he wants it rather than quiet, simple talk with Denmark about could a deal be made, what would be the cost, were there other arrangements that could be made. It isn't so stupid an idea. It's just, as usual, how he executes it like an idiot. And it is designed as a distraction.
You know, it's the art of the deal, baby.
Yeah, he doesn't have it. He's not an artist.
But, you know, there is a sort of a note of desperation here that he is trying to find a legacy. And you referred to Stewart's purchase of Alaska. This also, going back to Alan's comment, this also masks an earlier comment in the day about Russia and Russia's involvement in the G8 and bringing them back in, which, you know, was hidden by the tweet. And I will note for anybody at home who's keeping score, apparently in Trump's mind, Russia is good and Denmark is bad, which shows you
how skewed
our policy is.
And sure, also, let's use that word.
Yeah, and well, you don't have to beep it, so it's so that's a good thing. You know, but the other part of this, and I think what's insulting is that he canceled a meeting with a world leader by tweet.
And that's
really offensive.
Well, the other thing too, but I mean, this was brought up. But look, you've got he's a developer who wants to go in and buy a country that is suffering horrible effects of climate change, that have only been furthered by the policies that he continues to either put down or to.
And therein is the tone deafness of the person that we call president. It must be the chair that I'm in because I'm in Alan's chair and I'm disagreeing right now with Rosemary. As a matter of fact, when she opened her mouth and said what she said, like agreeing with the gesture,
that
wasn't a bad idea. My mouth just basically hit the ground.
I don't like the people sitting in that chair.
Can we get rid of the chair?
Yeah,
it's the chair.
There are several things that are happening right now in the world involving the G7, formerly G8, that I think this president is trying to gloss over and keep the American people distracted from. Understanding. We right now we're in the midst of a brand new arms race, right? I mean, for the last 50 years, it's been about neutralizing, eliminating nuclear proliferation, and we've just basically gotten out of the INF pact with Russia. We're testing ballistic missiles right now. Russia just had an enormous meltdown, nuclear meltdown, that they're keeping the entire world away from. They're not even reporting out just the magnitude of what's just transpired. And here we are on the eve of the G7 meeting, and the president of the United States makes the most ridiculous assertion in that we should allow for Russia to come back in and make this G8. And, of course, if he doesn't. He doesn't hesitate from taking swipes at the former president, although he's wrong and he's got his facts, absolutely wrong about who, in fact, forced Putin out. It was the conglomeration of nations that did. It wasn't just President Obama. The bigger point here is in 2 weeks, he's supposed to be in Poland, celebrating, along with other of our allies. World War II, and there's a ceremony, and then he was supposed to be stopping over in Greenland. And so what does he do? He basically insults Greenland. He insults our allies, and he props up Russia, We're not talking about that because what we're talking about is the actual transactional purchase of.
Well, that's our fault, not Trump's. I mean, I have many issues with Trump, but bold action is something that you want from a president. If he had done this right, if there really had been a possibility of a sale, not only would it have been possibly great for the U.S., but it also would have backed up his idea about climate, that global warming is not all bad, that there's lots of opportunities. See, look at what I did. So, again, it's not the idea that I hate. It's Trump's timing, his method of going about it, which is ineffective. And you're right. It does distract from all the stuff about
Russia. I get what you're saying about how it makes some strategic sense. I mean, we do have military operations there. But on the other hand, I mean, this kind of harkens back to the kind of imperialist days of, you know, global expansion. I just don't think that's where we should be right now. If anything, we should be advocating that the people of Greenland have, you know, a self-governing country that is free of. I mean, I think they have. There's some tension there with Denmark as it is. I don't think that we should be looking to put more people under our thumb at this particular moment.
Well, you speak of global imperialism, and I agree with you. Where we've managed to transition from global imperialism to democratic influence. We've managed to lay our flag on the shores of many nations, not by force or not by the desire to just purchase them straight outright. We've been spreading, you know, the virtues of democracy, and that's opened doors for you know, commercial investment. But right now, we're experiencing the doctrine of, you know, U.S. goes at it alone. We don't want to be part of the global community. The last 3 years, we've done everything we possibly can to basically ostracize ourselves from a global community. And here we are talking about purchasing land in order to lay our flag in other places.
So I think in the geopolitical context, it's really important to remember what message are we sending to Putin. He was removed from the G7, G8 because of what he did in the Crimea. And now we're talking to one of our Baltic allies, and we're picking a fight there. And the concern that I've heard from people that I know in Sweden is what happens to Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, and there is Russian influence in those countries. And if the thought is that the United States is not going to stand behind its allies, then that's a potential green light for Putin. So this issue, while it may seem a little bizarre and thinking, you know, at home, why are you spending so much time on this? This has some really major ramifications as far as the balance of power there.
You know, I agree with you, and I think the real story here is the Russian story. I keep thinking 10 years down the road, 15 years down the road, after all the smoke clears and we learn about, you know, what Trump was up to and what his money was and his relationship with the Russians, and we got rid of that Russian thing remark right from the very beginning. We're going to find out a great deal about this president's relationship with Putin and with Russia.
I have a question for Alan. Alan, who are the lions in the Senate right now? Because we just buried, I think, the last lion of the Senate. John McCain, if the president of the United States, whether it was George Bush, Barack Obama, or Donald Trump, had engaged in some, you know, ridiculous foreign, you know, a faux pas, foreign policy faux pas, he would be absolutely vocal and critical. And the rest, and it would signal to the rest of the world that there is disagreement. It would signal to the rest of the world that, boy, you know, just because they have a different president, they're not abandoning the philosophy that they've had for the last 60, 70 years. We don't have that voice right now in the Senate.
We don't. We don't. You know, you're absolutely right about that. You know, I've been a big Chuck Schumer fan for years and years, but I have to say I'm deeply disappointed in the guy. You know, we need somebody who really has the heft, who would stand up and say nothing doing. I think your question was a great one, but you know, it was presented in such a way as that you already gave the answer.
I mean, there was some hope that Mitt Romney might kind of assume that role, and he has been mildly critical of the president at times, but you know, very, very tepidly, very quietly.
He ain't it.
There's a lot of lying going on in the Senate.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Who it is, or
depends how you spell lying.
Lying. Yes. Lying. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were asking who was lying. I'm like, oh boy, it's only an hour and a half program.
Well, I mean, what is the so furthering that of? I want to go back to something that Robert was talking about of just the idea of our relationship in the world. By so yeah, you break off a major meeting via tweet. And you've been saying all along that, you know, there are other reasons to meet, and then you find out, okay, well, this is the sole reason, and I guess that's not really a shock. But just what is that? I don't think it does anything new to further damage our relationships with other nations, but it certainly just adds to the pile, right?
It leads to a continued deterioration of relationships. And the relationships throughout the two bureaucracies, whether it's the United States or whether it's Denmark, will continue to move along, but they won't be as close. And in Denmark's mind, they're going to be wondering, if the chips are down, can we trust the United States? And what they'll start to do is they'll start to look for other partners. And that's where you start to see the weakening of these key bonds. So it's sort of like varnish on an engine is what he's doing, is that this will seize the engine maybe 10 years down the road. And you say, wow, what happened? It comes back to this.
Well, Denmark's already expressed publicly that they don't feel like they can rely on the U.S. anymore. As a matter of fact, I mean, if you look at what he's just done by virtue of tweet, in a matter of 24 hours, he's lifted Vladimir Putin. He has basically stuck his finger in the eyes of Denmark. Now, what do you think the rest of our partners in NATO are thinking right now?
Well, we already know it. Angela Merkel said this 6 months ago, that we can't rely, and so did France, that we can't rely on the United States anymore. We're on our own.
That is devastating.
I think it is devastating. I don't think this is the cause of it. It's one more symptom that has been going on.
But I think the other issue too that we have to maybe this is a conversation that we have further down the road. But
or at
you know,
least
again,
after the break.
Well, again, you look, you talk about nuclear proliferation, right? And if you cannot rely on the United States, and Russia is already out there developing more nuclear technology, now these countries that have always, been under the umbrella of our protection are going to seek out, you know, nuclear technology themselves.
I think it's far worse. I think it's all about Trump's relationship with Putin, and we're going to find that out.
We're going to pause there. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, David Soares, Chris Churchill, Robert Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, we have David Soares, Chris Churchill, Robert Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo. We welcome your letters. panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We have letters. Let's go there. And then we'll move on. Zach says, Trump isn't just distracting us or being stupid with Greenland. This is pure vulture capitalism. As Trump's environmental policies exacerbate climate change, companies are chomping at the bit. He's simply doing their bidding.
Yeah, I mean, one of the comments we made during the break was, this is one of the reasons why it's important to see his taxes. It'd be really important. It would be good to know if he or the Trump family have any interests in Greenland that would be affected by such a sale.
He's the pyromaniac starting fires and then wanting to sell you the hoses. So, I mean, it's just consistent.
Let's go to Janice, who says, with all the increasingly crazy talk coming out of the White House, why isn't anyone looking into invoking the 25th Amendment? His mental stability is really coming into question, which has been, I think this letter may have come through like every two or three weeks, I think, right?
Don't you have to have a cabinet, though, to do that?
Yeah. No, you have to have a cabinet. President. You have to have a Senate and a cabinet.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a wonderful, frustrated comment, but it just ain't going
to
happen.
Well, also, the closer you get to the election, the less likely that would ever be, right?
Impeachment seems more likely.
It's not on the table. I mean, I understand the frustration that leads to a question like that. And certainly it's appropriate because he is acting crazy. Nevertheless, that's just not on the table.
Yeah, but Alan, do you feel like the last week has been crazier than normal?
Nah, I've been sticking with a comment I made earlier in the show that I think nobody really wanted to pick up on. But I do believe that when the smoke clears, it's all going to be about Trump and Russia.
Well, Rosemary wouldn't let us pick that up. She said we can't agree with Alan today.
You can always gauge. You can always gauge his behavior. Look, the crazier he gets, it must mean that there is something coming down the line where he's looking to distract you. So when that thing comes, you're not talking about it. And he's so – the last week he has been very erratic. And so is it to mask the economy? I mean, last Friday that was the theory. This week, I don't know if that's if it's all about the economy. It could be something much worse.
You guys are going to take all this back when we're all vacationing in Greenland in 5 years. Don't need a passport to get there.
You will need sunscreen, though.
You will need sunscreen. Keith writes to us, come on, the Greenland story isn't even a story. It's a distraction from Trump yesterday saying anti-Semitic remarks and the economy is struggling. There have been articles about the Trump administration saving issues and rolling them out to distract as needed. Trump is a white nationalist and the economy is tanking. Don't get distracted by the squirrel.
Squirrel.
A squirrel.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I still find it hard to know what's the real problem and what's the distraction. I find it all like a vast morass of bad news. I'm not sure that he knows the difference anymore.
You may be right. It may really have to do with maintaining, you know, his topmost place in the national discourse, and that it doesn't really matter. He doesn't think it through. It's just, I'll do this, and his eyes light up, and he does it, and he gets where he wants to go.
Well, it's sort of like a political Ponzi scheme, right? And we're at the point where he's going to continue to put more into it to keep the scheme going.
Nicely. That's right. I've often said when you're throwing red meat to the base, there's a point at which, you know, you got to throw more and more and more in order to keep it going and, on the red meat scale.
Yeah, but where is the other voice that's providing comfort to, you know, not only – you know, Americans, but providing comfort to the rest of the world? I mean, the first several months of this man's administration, you at least had Joe Biden telling the rest of the world, hey, don't worry, we're going to get through this. And you're not hearing that anymore. Or maybe it's being said, but we cannot seem to, that message can't seem to penetrate.
And we don't believe it.
Yeah, I was going to say, do we believe it anymore? Even this show used to be more comforting than it is right now.
I beg your pardon.
I do.
I'm comforted by all of you here. I am.
I don't remember it being so comforting.
Yeah, I
do. It seems like it's nothing but bad news every time I come in.
This will end. We'll move on. People will see. And none of that has happened.
I mean, we could be talking about wonderful things like the children who are in cages right now not receiving any kind of medical treatment and flu shots. I mean, we could be talking about something pleasant like that.
You make my point, David, that it's harder and harder to be reassuring and tell the world or even each other that everything is okay when we see things like that. That's exactly the point I'm making.
Bob writes to us and says, so Trump is going to Poland to commemorate the end of World War II, which was won by anti-fascists while castigating Antifa and supporting fascists in the U.S. Sometimes I believe that we're living through a badly written sitcom.
Now, there's a good letter.
It is. Well, again, sobering. All right, let's move on to other topics. One of the letter writers mentioned that the distraction of the Greenland story from the anti-Semitic remarks of the president. So let us talk about that. Trump says that any Jewish people who vote for Democrats are showing great disloyalty or lack of knowledge. President Trump on Tuesday said that any Jewish people who vote for Democrats are showing that total lack of knowledge or great disloyalty, prompting an outcry from critics who say the president's remarks were promoting anti-Semitic stereotypes. Trump made the comment in an exchange with reporters in the Oval Office ahead of a meeting with the Romanian president. He began by lashing out at Representative Rashida Tlaib, questioning the sincerity of her tears at a news conference where she talked about her decision not to travel to Israel to see her elderly grandmother who lives in the occupied West Bank. Yesterday, I noticed for the first time Tlaib with the tears. Trump said, all of the sudden, she starts with the tears. I don't buy it for a second because I've seen her in a very vicious mood at campaign rallies, my campaign rallies, before she was a congresswoman. I said, who is that? And I saw a woman that was violent and vicious and out of control. Jeez. He then went on to attack. This only gets worse, by the way.
He's so misogynistic. Oh, it's hard to listen to.
He then went on to attack Democrats more generally over the views of Tlaib and Representative Ilhan Omar. Both women have long been fierce critics of Israel and its treatment of Palestinians. They support the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, a global protest of Israel. Where has the Democratic Party gone? Trump asked. Where have they gone? Where they're defending these people over the state of Israel, and I think any Jewish people that vote for a Democrat, I think it shows either a total lack of knowledge or great disloyalty. Critics on both sides of the aisle, as well as Jewish organizations, immediately pointed out that Trump used the word disloyalty, echoed anti-Semitic tropes accusing Jews of dual allegiance. American Jews, like all Americans, have a range of political views and priorities, according to David Harris, chief executive of the nonpartisan American Jewish Committee. Alan?
Well, I'm a Jew, of course, and I'm very proud of that. I'm just beyond angry at Trump over this thing. You know, I mean, one can disagree with a couple of people in a multifaceted Congress, and you can say, okay, I don't like what she said about this. I don't like what she said about Israel and the rest of it. But that group is not what got the Congress into Democratic hands. It was middle class, middle range, purplish Democrats all over the country that won. So what he's trying to do is to say that these two or three people are the ones who are representative of the Democratic Party. And to some degree, he's getting away with it. And it is really disgusting. But, there's nothing that is too low for this guy to go for.
So two points to make. One coming from Chuck Schumer, Senate Majority Leader.
There he is. There he is. Chuck, we spotted him. We
found him. Weighed in to all my fellow American Jews, particularly those who support Donald Trump, when he uses a trope that's been used against the Jewish people for centuries with dire consequences. He is encouraging, wittingly or unwittingly, anti-Semites throughout the country and world. Enough, Schumer wrote on his Twitter account. Also, not for nothing, but it has also been brought out by many that the overwhelming majority of American Jews have long voted Democratic. In 2016, for instance, according to exit polling, 71% of Jewish voters voted for the Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton. Only 23% voted for Donald Trump.
Well, I think Alan's right. I think he is trying to make these two women, or the four women, kind of representative of the whole party. And you know, strategically, that might make sense. Just like the Greenland thing might make sense strategically. It doesn't mean it's necessarily the right thing to do. But these women too have also had their own history of anti-Semitic remarks.
That's right.
And I don't know. There's kind of like no. It's like, who do you root for in this?
Well, I'm certainly
so
not
women. Reading, the so. Women. You root for the women.
Yeah.
And also, Trump seems to have a problem with crying. Didn't Chuck Schumer get some criticism from him? Mm-hmm. Crying,
wait, wait.
Chuck. If you want your way with Trump, you obviously don't cry in front.
Yeah, I'd like to root for them, but they have their own negative history with Israel, don't get me wrong.
They're not anti-Semitic. They're anti-Israeli, strongly anti-Israeli, and that's not the same.
Well,
and the media,
wait a second.
Like Trump, should not be conflating those. Too.
I'm not so sure about that. I mean,
hold on, Alan, go ahead.
No, I'm liking where Chris is going. Go
okay,
ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I mean,
yielding the
don't
floor
get me wrong.
Chris.
I think you can criticize Israel without being anti-Semitic, but I think that
that
members of the squad have at times played into kind of the tropes that the same one that Trump. You know, the money
the
thing,
Benjamin
the loyalty
Cognitive.
Thing.
Yeah.
And the group that was sponsoring their trip, MIFTA, has a long history of really, really troubling statements and really troubling actions. And I think that has actually kind of been lost a little bit in this whole thing. It's just how they shouldn't have been associating themselves with MIFTA. Shouldn't have been.
Yeah, but it's also important to point out, though, that you can disagree with Netanyahu's policies and still support the state of Israel and their right to exist.
Absolutely. Right.
And I would posit to folks to think about this. If we're going to use Trump's logic, then Stephen King is the representative of the Republican Party and the GOP.
Sure.
So if you want to take it to the extremes, let's have a conversation about the extremes.
Oh, that's
right.
They
call that nut picking, where you pick out the nuts on either side and you make them representative of the whole party. And it's
I wasn't sure where you were going.
Yeah. Wait a minute. I have to object to a comparison of Steve King with the squad. Nuts?
Well, you may have to object.
I think if Steve King had decided to go on a tour sponsored by a group that had supported terrorism, I think, or some, you know, I think people would be pretty disgusted by that, as they should be. You know, I'm not sure that the comparison between the two is exactly apt, but you know, bigoted comments are bigoted comments.
There are a number of important conversations that need to be had about Israel, about Tlaib and Omar, right, and the squad. There are a number of important conversations. The problem, however, is when you are beginning that conversation from comments or ridiculous tweets that are made by this particular president who has no credibility on any of these issues. The idea that we're talking about anti-Semitism and that Donald Trump is beginning that conversation, he may as well begin conversations about slavery and and bigotry. This is not the person who is going to start that conversation. I do agree. We can be critical of some of the policies from Israel without being critical of an entire group of people. But this also is just the beginning of what I think is going to be identity politics at its absolute worst as we move into, 2020. Because he's going to be talking about, the Jewish people as a whole and speaking of them as one monolithic group. He's also going to be talking about African Americans. He's already done that. What have Democrats done for you? And he's, gone down that road. So the kind of conversations and the disagreements that you're going to we can have them, but they just shouldn't. We shouldn't start that dialogue, based on a ridiculous assertion from this particular president. I feel sorry for that Romanian president who had to go on stage directly after he made these comments. How comfortable was he yesterday?
Yeah.
Looking for a little awkward. A little awkward. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok. We also have Rosemary Armeo, Bob Griffin, Chris Churchill, and, of course, David Soares. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Were we done with the other thing? Did anybody else want to say anything else? No? Okay, good.
I do. Fabulous music.
Yes, it's the Dukes of Dixieland, Alan. Dixieland.
Doesn't get better.
It doesn't. Good stuff. All right.
Flogging Molly.
Doing requests now on the show. All right. So I think we do we all see this coming? What? What's wrong?
You said Dixieland. I just...
Are you
Banjos
right?
And Dixieland,
I know. They make
I'm
you
sorry,
nervous.
Man. I look. Got to look for the exit.
What? you really got to be with my son Jonas in New Orleans on the weekends as they do these second line marches, David. And there's so much of this great music. And it is, of course, primarily black.
Alan, so a few weeks ago we were in the Outer Banks. My wife stops at a gas station, and there's a Confederate flag, and it's Dixieland gas. I looked at my wife. I'm like, are you seriously thinking about stopping here for gas? And she's like, what? And she looked up, and she goes, oh, my God, I didn't even see that. Really? I'm just saying Dixieland and banjos.
Are you telling me a banjo player...
I believe there are non-racist banjo players.
Pete Seeger was a racist? I don't think so. We shall overcome. You better cut it out.
I could go with this for the rest of the show, but I'll
rest of us will just sit back and enjoy
and watch.
I wish we had popcorn, Joe.
Yeah. okay, so let's talk about boy. Sometimes you say the news is predictable, and you know sometimes every once in a while you're surprised. So, the president had said that look, we're ready. We're ready to endorse very meaningful background checks. We're all set. We have to do these red flag laws. These are very important. And then he went on vacation to Bedminster, New Jersey, his golf course spot there, and sat down and had a long talk, apparently in the middle of the night, with Wayne LaPierre, who you may remember as the chief executive of the National Rifle Association, and
the pride of Siena College.
Yes, pride of Siena College, and not having not in the news at all. Otherwise, so now the president says that he is much more concerned, very very concerned about the Second Amendment, more so than most presidents would be. He said, and added that people don't realize we have very strong background checks right now. He also echoed the standard response to mass shootings delivered by the NRA, which since 1966 has pushed the government to focus on the mental problems of the gunmen rather than how they were able to obtain the guns. I don't want people to forget that this is a mental health problem, Mr. Trump said. I don't want them to forget that because it is a mental health problem. At a rally in Manchester, New Hampshire last week, he noted that it is not the gun that pulls the trigger, it is the person holding the gun, paraphrasing a decades-old bumper sticker slogan from the gun rights group. Mr. Trump's turnaround is the latest example of the president ultimately capitulating to the views of his populist, white, and working-class political base, and it came after NRA officials flooded the White House, Congress, and governor's offices around the country with phone calls since the back-to-back mass shootings in this country in Dayton, Ohio, and El Paso, Texas, on August 3rd and 4th.
I disagree with one thing in there. I think the white working class is actually pretty much in favor of background checks. I don't think that, that's not playing to them. The polls show that Americans overwhelmingly support universal background checks.
I think that Trump is deplorable on this issue, and he, again, has backed down. He boldly lied. We're going to do something. Republicans are going to take the lead and did not, which is exactly what McConnell had in mind when he go, no, we're not going to have a special session. Let's all sit around and wait. He knew this would happen. Okay, that's a given. But the Democrats, why are they not holding this? Gun control and shooting gun violence is a massive problem, and mental health is part of it. So call them on that. You think it's a mental health problem? Let's see a bill right now. Trump, if you recall, already pulled back measures that would have kept guns out of the hands of many mentally ill people. Why is that not back? Why are we not hearing about that? Call him on. We're not playing the game. We're not playing the game that Trump is playing. And we're losing doubly because he's untrustworthy, but we're not countering.
The other element of this that's really disturbing is the undue influence on an outside group, in this case the NRA. You know, you think about it in a 30-minute conversation, and there's 30-minute conversation. There's a $30 million donation to the Trump campaign and 30 pieces of silver that are here. And the next shooting, it really sits at the feet of LaPierre and Trump in this. But this is the undue influence in our political system that was overturned by the Supreme Court. And this is I'm going to link that back to the Citizens United case. This is one of the reasons why we have to get the big money and the dark money out of politics, because they're owning the system and at the expense of all of our safety right now. I mean, this is deplorable.
I think the NRA, as well as Mitch McConnell and a number of the NRA supporters, understand the cycle of mass shootings. You know, the shooting occurs, everyone's devastated. The first week, we want, to change gun laws. And if you polled the country the first week, there's going to be a certain feeling about the issue. And as time goes on, they're able to beat back a lot of those issues.
So, God forbid, something happens today. What does the president say 12 hours after this argument?
The president's going to say we need background checks. We need to do something about
this. He'll go right back again.
It's the same cassette tape or record you know, that skips. It goes right back to the first verse where he says what he says, and then when he speaks to the NRA, he just
goes back to outdated technology.
You know, the funny thing is, I think that the one who wants background checks is actually what he thinks.
Oh, I do.
He's a Manhattan guy. He's not I don't see him as any sort of, you know, Second Amendment extremist by any stretch. But I think, and he talks to the NRA, and they tell him, listen, if you open up an inch of room between us and our, you know, between you and our voters, you will lose the election. And he listens to that.
I agree, because after Parkland, and he just, there was something very honest about what he said, because they caught him off guard. They asked him a question. He responded to it. And I believe that was the way that he actually felt. But, you know, the last person that does speak to the president is the person that ultimately wins on policy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure about that, David. You know, a lot of people speak to the president. But when Wayne LaPierre speaks to the president, if he's the last guy, he gets his way, because he's got the money, $30 million in the last election, and he's got the votes. So it isn't. I mean, I would like to think that somebody who he's fired, one of those guys, McGahn or one of those other people who spoke truth to him, were the last people in the room. But I don't think it works that way. I think it's the ones who have the money.
You know, I've asked this question before, but I'll ask it again. When did the Second Amendment become the primary amendment of our Constitution?
When the most money got behind the Second Amendment.
But there's a group of people who will vote only on that issue. There's no group of people who will vote only on the First Amendment or the Third or the Fourth or the Fifth.
And then you couple that with the, racial anxiety that people are experiencing in various parts of our country.
It's truly perverse, though, and as a gun owner myself, and someone who does support gun ownership, responsible gun ownership, I don't think it's the primary, and shouldn't be the primary mission of the government is to protect guns. It's the whole package, and the fact that children can't go to school because they're afraid, or if you're looking at one of the best sellers on Amazon being bulletproof backpacks. I mean, our society is warped, and the president and the Congress really need to think differently about this. This isn't going to get better.
I don't even think it's really a Second Amendment issue. I almost feel like that's a little bit of a diversion, because it's not. These amendments all have limits. All of our freedom, there's limits on every one of them, and there's nothing that says you can't have a background check. I support the Second Amendment too, and I don't see a background check as any sort of infringement on that amendment whatsoever.
Well, I don't either, but it's framed constantly and with this drumbeat.
Yeah, but that's a framing. That's not a real.
But it's a successful framing. And that's where I think we need to start.
All right, we got to take a break. But when we come back, we'll continue this, and we have letters as well. Roundtable at WAM, panel at round. Let's try it again. Panel at WAMC.org. Thank you, Ray. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Act Three, and David Soares is here, Chris Churchill, Robert Griffin. We have Rosemary Romeo, and of course, Alan Chartok. Let me go to the letters, and we'll go to David, who writes about Greenland and says the idea that a purchase of Greenland could be good for America really means that it would be good for open pit mining interests, offshore oil drillers, and other exploiters of pristine environments. It's not going to be good for you or for me.
Rosemary, any comment?
No. I actually believe that you can go after resources without reaping the environment, but I don't think Trump has that in mind. So I agree to a great extent with the letter. But from Trump's point of view, strategy and resources is a reason to go after a big real estate deal.
What examples are there of that, Rosemary, when you say you can believe in going after resources without raping the land? What examples?
Well, certainly not coal, but okay. There are oil extraction projects that have not raped and pillaged the land. We have the technology to do it. We choose not to do it because it's cheaper to rape and pillage the land.
And for listeners at home, we don't pick on Rosemary until the last 15 minutes.
Yeah,
just because we're not brave enough to do it at the beginning of the show.
All you big giants are going after me. That's okay. I'm on Trump's side on this, and he's winning.
Back to letters. David says, riddle me this, Batman. He didn't actually say that, but I just felt I'd add it. Will Trump blame Jewish voters when he loses in 2020?
He will not acknowledge a loss in 2020.
That's a good answer.
There are a lot of people staying in front of him before that, media.
And then Scott says, when Trump paints some Jews as disloyal and reprehensible, that opens the door for white nationalists, and Jews will not replace us. It's a very bad direction. We have this from Jay, who says, Trump's remarks about Jewish Democrats are absurd. Will he say something similar about Catholics come election time? Stay tuned.
But, you know, that whole question of dual loyalty is tied, I mean, historically is tied all the way back to the pogroms in the Soviet Union, Russia. But it's also, that's the language of the Klan. I mean, it was the question that they were putting to Smith when he ran for president and Kennedy when he ran for president.
Yeah, he's Catholic,
and,
too.
And right. So this is part of that, of the classic KKK playbook.
Mm. Wynn writes to us and says, Rosemary, thank you for just stating the obvious of the squad is not anti-Semitic. They are anti-Israel. I am an American Jew. I'm completely behind Omar and Tlaib and their criticisms of Israel. Netanyahu was elected by the Israeli people. So what does that say about Israeli these days?
You know what it says. Same thing as Americans of electing Trump.
Michael says, a while ago, WAMC interviewed Jane Meyer, author and journalist, New Yorker columnist, whose book Dark Money traced the influence of the Koch brothers over U.S. politics and anti-environmental regulation animus. It linked Mitch McConnell in those efforts, if I recall correctly. Your discussion this morning of Trump's interest in Greenland and acquiring its potential natural resources seems more real than mere distraction in that context. Keep McConnell on your radar panel. It's not just Trump.
Well, it's not just Trump. It's an entire culture right now that we're experiencing in our, you know, body politic, whether it's local, state, or, you know, or federal. But I'll tell you the greater truth, and more so than, you know, dark money or bright money, it's people aren't voting, and apathy is truly the enemy here, and that's what we have to figure out.
All right, let's go on to other topics, and I would like to touch on. We talked about this a little bit yesterday, but let's go for the story on, as soon as I can actually access it on my computer machine, which no one told me. How come you folks don't tell me when I link the wrong stories?
I don't think you did.
Yeah, you did.
Yes, I did.
Oh.
For students, that's showing that somebody didn't do their homework.
I'm just saying. while we're waiting for you to do that, I just want to get a status report on Alan, whether or not the crows have been stealing your hearing aid. We haven't had a problem with that.
No, not lately. Okay. It was not my. It was not my doing. For those who don't remember.
Oh no! My
hearing aid went missing. I went to the hearing aid doctor who did hearing aid lookup. You know, you can look up where your hearing aid is, and it was showed on the side of the road down near Sheffield, and the only way it could have gotten there was by a crow. Turned out not to be right.
All right. Well, thanks for that vamping, David. That's very good. Okay, so we were talking about this idea of payroll taxes and whether that would help spur the economy and help Trump during the election year if a recession is looming. The White House fought back on those reports over the weekend and on Monday and Tuesday, saying that was not the case, and that the economy is in great shape and no, that none of that is necessary. And then the president said, he confirmed the fact that he was considering various tax reductions, including a payroll tax cut, to stimulate an economy that is beginning to slow. Companies that Mr. Trump has pointed to as signs of economic strength are now warning of weakness. United States Steel, for example, an early champion of Mr. Trump's metal tariffs, and a frequent mention in the president's Twitter feed is idling workers and slowing production at a plant in Michigan. Home Depot on Tuesday lowered its sales outlook for the year as it braces for consumer spending to take a hit from Mr. Trump's Chinese tariffs. Consumer and small business optimism have fallen, and 2 in 5 economists surveyed by the National Association of Business Economists now expect the economy to slip into a recession this year or next. Mr. Trump, speaking to reporters at the White House, continued to portray the economy as incredible and played down any chance that the U.S. would enter into a recession. Any tax cut, he said, would not be done as a defensive move, more of as a bonus.
You know, there's no question that there is a recession coming, right? I mean, does anybody disagree with that? The really only important question is when.
Right.
If it comes before the election, Trump is toast. If it comes after the election, then Trump has a better chance because he can claim the economy, no question.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, if the economy starts to slow down, he is toast. There's no chance that he gets reelected because that's the one thing he can kind of hang his hat on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in his defense, I think any president would be denying that a recession is coming. There is kind of you don't want to admit it because then you almost make it happen. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy kind of thing, you know.
On the other hand, all the signals he's giving out there, Chris, are that one is coming by all of the denial. Right? I mean,
right.
The lady doth protest too much.
Yeah, and that's causing a certain uncertainty out there, which, you know, may in fact be increasing the likelihood of a recession. It's kind of ironic.
Well, he's already laying the foundation as to who should be blamed for what's happening with the economy as well. I mean, he's already out there talking about the Fed chair.
Right.
And he's
His Fed chair.
He's waxing poetically on the man now. So he's laying the foundation for that lie. He's already laying the foundation for the fact that the media is coloring the data. He's attacking the media, of course, which he did before when the economy was doing very well under then President Obama, because he talked about employment, you know, the employment numbers and those figures being fuzzy numbers, and he's doing that again.
All of this is kind of a myth. It isn't as if Trump actually did cause the great economy we had now. Obama has much to do with it as Trump did. But that's our trope, that the current president gets the credit or the blame.
Right.
So for me, the terrifying thing is I agree a recession is coming. All the cycles are there. Just the natural flow of our economy would tend to think there's a slowdown. If it comes after, if things stay great and he's reelected and then it comes, think of the trouble we're in then, because do you really trust him and his bozo economists to fix things, to write it? I mean, Obama, you can blame him for lots of things, but he got us out of a really tight situation.
Nice use
if
of
we're
bozo.
In that again, what happens? What happens?
Well, and the other piece of this that I think we really need to be cautious of is cuts to the payroll tax are continuing to weaken things like Social Security and Medicare and the social support fabric. And I'm not 100% sure that this next round of proposed tax cuts, I'm putting that in air quotes, isn't aimed exactly at that. That it's meant to start to undermine the financial underpinnings of these systems. So we're going to create another financial crisis in these systems, but not admit to it. The other element that I think everyone should keep an eye on is that the administration is trying to make noise that they can do this without congressional approval. And what the Treasury Department is saying is that they can't unless they get a ruling from the Department of Justice, which I will remind people at home that Barr is a wholly owned subsidiary of Trump Industries. So,
no.
You know, it's something that we're going to have to watch really carefully.
Well, I think the economy, There are things that are naturally going to occur in the economy without any assistance from the policies from this president. But I think he helped to usher and expedite, you know, the coming clouds because of his, you know, tariffs. Right?
I mean,
it started with him loading up his weapon and pointing it directly at China, and then pulling the firing and hitting Canada because of his tariffs on steel, not recognizing that our manufacturing chains, you know, for especially the auto industry, exist in all countries, primarily in Canada. And Canada was going to end up being hurt more so by the tariffs on steel than China was. And then there's just been escalation from that point, where now the greatest, I would say, those that are suffering the most are our farmers. But his most recent indication, it's that it's going to be the entirety of the United States. And then he backed off and said, well, maybe we'll wait until after the holiday season, then we'll impose those taxes so that Americans who are buying toys aren't going to experience it. So there's a lot that's happening in the economy, which I don't think you can necessarily blame the president for, but he's helped to usher in this condition
that's
with the tariffs.
Except you just talked about the farmers, and my only pushback would be is that we've pumped substantive amounts of money into agro welfare to cover for the failed trade policies that this administration has put in place. So I think that we actually are masking the impact on the farm community, and this is definitely going to spread. And I like your analogy, but I would note that, you know, the economic gun doesn't pull the trigger. A person does.
Nicely done.
A crazy person, right?
All right. We have some letters. We'll end with these this morning. Nancy says, curious that Trump caved to the NRA when a week ago he bullied Netanyahu about allowing Democratic congressional reps into Israel. Now who's weak? When will there be an investigation of the NRA's donations to Republicans who are beholden to them? Max writes, it's not fair that everyone has to bear the cost for those that want guns. Shouldn't the extra school security be paid for by taxes on the sales of guns and the ammunition?
Oh, yeah, that'll happen.
It's not a bad idea, though.
It's a good idea.
Well, the problem with that is that you're going to have leaders, governors that will go about implementing such policies. But unless it's being done on a federal level, then it just becomes a patchwork, and then there are workarounds. The vast majority of the guns that are used in crimes in our state, they're not from our state. They're from southern states.
Robert writes, let's just stop with the mental health cries. Yes, it's a problem, but there's also an ideology problem along the indoctrination to radical ideas. Just because the majority of us would never think of doing something crazy, it does not always make it a mental health issue. Not all angry people have a mental health issue.
No, but at the same time, any attention that we can bring to the deplorable condition of our overall state of mental health in this country, I'm going to take advantage of it.
Lack of treatment, lack of beds, all of that, right.
It is horrifying what this country does not do for our citizens in regards to mental health.
It's the mentally ill who are causing the gun violence problem in this country. Other countries have the same percentage of mentally ill and do not have the gun problem. However, what I'm saying as a tactic for Democrats to say, okay, if that's the issue, let's fix it. Let's work on this. And we're still ahead.
We do have this letter from Paul who says, good morning. I honestly don't know what is involved in current background checks for gun purchases, but if it's truly a mental health issue, I think we should add a comprehensive mental health screening for anyone who wants to buy a gun. Marilyn says, let's not make a mistake that Wayne LaPierre is telling Trump that he will lose his voters. He's telling Trump that he will pull his money. After all, who are the NRA and right-wing people going to vote for? The Democrats? Michael says, I remind the panel and the public that hatred and bigotry are not mental illnesses. Elizabeth says, background checks, yes, they are necessary. But what about young people who get or take guns from someone or somewhere else? Those who take a gun and go out in a shooting spree. Kevin says, so let me get this straight. A bankrupt, almost, organization has more power than the President of the United States. Got it. Let that just sink in.
And by the way, $30 million, I think, is what they gave to Trump the last time. That may sound like a lot. It's really not.
If they want to give me half of that, I'd be.
If you're
I'd
from
be
the
really
Berkshires, that's not really a lot.
You're quite right.
That's what a house costs.
Nice. Great Barrington, I guess that's just walking around money.
Oh, you're all going there, huh?
Well, jealousy always rises to the top.
Jeff says, I wonder if anyone has ever asked Trump if he thinks white supremacy is a form of mental illness. We love your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. What? Were you going to say something?
No.
Oh, I thought, were you getting ready to leave?
Yeah, looking at the clock.
We're done. We're out of here.
But who's counting?
No, you got a minute and a half, but that's all right. I also want to talk about this story that this is a new story that the Trump administration has announced plans to replace a decades-old agreement that puts a 20-day limit on holding undocumented children. They now have indefinite detention of migrant families. The Trump administration announced this plan just moments ago to replace a decades-old agreement on holding undocumented kids. This is, again, just came out about 12 minutes ago.
Their fixation with children is really disturbing. And it in so many ways goes against, you know, our basic culture in this country. And when I hear this, I think, folks that support this administration, how in your heart can you look at this and say, this represents you?
How's that
Stephen
tax cut?
Miller, he doesn't have a heart.
How's that tax cut?
Well, tax cut doesn't really help most people. I mean,
that's the problem. When a man like this can garner support from people who say, well, you know, he did give us his tax cut, except, yeah, but he's also caging children.
Yeah.
You know? And you know, he spews, you know, anti-Semitic. He's a racist and a misogynist. But, you know, how's that tax cut?
Yeah. His policy is run by Stephen Miller. There were, interestingly, two front-page stories by the New York Times and the Washington Post looking at him. He doesn't have children. He doesn't have a heart. He believes cruel policies are the way to discourage immigrants
and he's really
from
young.
Coming here. He's 33 years old.
Yeah.
I don't know how he got this way, but that's the person who is
you know how he got this
policy.
Way? This was a kid who was attacking, you know, the people who clean after him in high school. I mean, that's the vintage video that they
throw away my garbage. We have janitors for that in the cafeteria.
So mom and dad should have been taking care of that then. And when you don't, it leads to this.
We're out of time, so you get the last word, sir.
As
Coming
always.
In on Wednesday.
Yeah, no. That's right.
Thank you all. We'll be back right after this.